The following is a product of the Uprising High School Ministry at The Grove.
All right, so a week ago, well, first let me just say, we're starting this new series, Just Do It, and I told you Sunday, it's not a sex series, okay? I promise you that. Maybe we'll do one soon, I don't know. So we're starting this new series. Basically, we're just going to be going through the book of James. And James is my wife's favorite book of the Bible, and it's as far as like New Testament goes, it's just kind of straightforward, to the point, just listen, this, do life this way. It's a wisdom book, which just means it's sort of like the book of Proverbs, but sort of written out and spoken a little more plainly, as opposed to poetically. So James just kind of just comes out and he's real with it. He was likely Jesus's younger brother. So that's a unique perspective and on Christianity, like being the half brother of, you know, like the savior of the world. Like good luck living up to that sibling standard. So we're gonna be starting this new series. All right. So with that said, a week ago was New Year's Eve, right? Is that right? Was that a week ago? Yeah, you guys were all drunk, so you don't remember. So a week ago was New Year's Eve. A lot of people were throwing up a week ago. I was throwing up a week ago, not because of alcohol. It was the first time in my life since I was in like seventh grade, probably even sixth grade, that I had thrown up not from alcohol. I'd thrown up twice from alcohol ever in my life. Once was my senior year. And then my freshman year of college, I could handle my liquor. We were in California, we were visiting family, and we were at my wife's sister's house, and she invited us over for dinner, and it was like this delicious like pasta and like with bread and all this good stuff. Reading it, they're like, hey, let's go to Kohl's. So we go to Kohl's and like we're running around Kohl's, and I'm like in charge of my daughter while they shop, and like I'm just chasing Jocelyn around, my stomach just kind of like, oh man, just started getting tight, and then it felt like it was like expanding, like there was like a gremlin like growing at an exponential rate inside my stomach. I thought maybe I'm pregnant. I didn't know what was happening. I've never been pregnant before, so I don't know what it feels like, but this was a new feeling, so I thought this could be it. And I'm in Kohl's, and I'm just like, honey, I think you need to take Jocelyn. We get in the car, we head back to the house, and they're like, hey, let's go inside and hang out and do arts and crafts. And I'm like, no, we need to get home. Like, I am not feeling good. I didn't know what was happening inside, but it just felt like my insides, my stomach was like, I don't feel like being a stomach, so I'm just going to fall apart right now. And 30-minute drive back to her mom's house, my mother-in-law's house. We get inside, we go upstairs, put Jocelyn down to sleep, and I'm just laying in bed, and I can't go to sleep. I'm in immense pain, super uncomfortable, and I don't know which way it's going to come. I feel an explosion coming. I just don't know which direction, if it's going like out the back end or out the top end or what. And I'm just thinking to myself, man, I haven't thrown up in so long. Like I'm like, it's something that I've been proud of. Like I haven't had the flu like since I was a little kid, and I don't want to throw up right now. I don't want to do that. And all of a sudden I feel, oh, get up, run to the bathroom. And I have a moment where I'm like, which way do I face? Because I still wasn't sure what was happening. And I'm like, oh, bottom, sit down, explode, do my thing. And I'm like, yes. I'm not being detailed. So, or am I? And I'm relieved, literally. But also just like in my soul, like, oh, thank you. It's just like food poisoning. I'm not sick. I'm not going to throw up. Go back inside, lay down, filled the room with just a cloud of nastiness. My wife about killed me. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh no. Oh no. Run back in, and I have the moment again. Top, bottom, top, oh my gosh, top. Out everywhere. And the only thing I could think in the moment was, don't come out my nose, don't come out my nose, don't come out. First one, oh, I was like, oh, it didn't come out my nose. Second one, oh, yeah, it didn't come out my nose. And then the last one somehow bypassed my mouth completely and was like all nose. Oh, but I felt so good because that gremlin just shot out everywhere. But it was awful, and it destroyed me for the week. A few days prior, our daughter had had it. But we didn't really know anything of it. We just thought, oh, hey, she threw up. And hey, look, a few minutes later, she has diarrhea. That's weird. Moving on. We didn't think anything of it. Didn't give her any medicine. She was fine. That same night, Jill ended up throwing up, and her brother got it the next day. And then, like, all our family started getting it, and everybody spent the week vomiting and out every direction. The second week of vacation was not a vacation for us. It was hard. It was difficult. It sucked. Every day, like, I'd be hungry, and then the second I ate something, it felt like I was going to die again. It wasn't until Saturday night, really even like Sunday evening after we got back and we were here, that I finally started to feel better. And so last week for us was a trial. Now, it wasn't like a deep, like, spiritual trial or anything like that, but it was a trial. It was difficult. It was, how do we be happy and enjoy the time with our family? How do we still take care of our daughter and take care of ourselves? Well, that answer was easy because, you know, my wife's awesome, and when a guy gets sick, we die for, you know, eternity. So I laid there. She took care of me and her daughter, so the problem was solved. But we get back, and so last week was a difficult trial, and in this first section of James, the first thing that he opens up with, and basically in all this sort of like how to do Christianity stuff, he talks about trials, and he talks about hard times and how to handle them. And it's because, not because there might be a chance that we'll face trials, but because these Christians that he was writing to, and really everyone, is going to face trials. We're going to face hard times. I guarantee you 98% of the people in this room are in the midst of a difficult moment right now. And the other 2% are in denial that they are, right? I mean, everybody in this room is dealing with something that's difficult. On different spectrum, on different scale, but we're all going through something that's hard. There's three different types of trials. Let me just first just kind of read the passage here out of James 1. It says, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. So consider it pure joy when you deal with crappy times. So when life sucks, be happy. Like, just like the second life gets hard, man, you just better be stoked. Peace out. Have a good night. Enjoy your life. No, right? He doesn't leave it there, thankfully, but he's just like, he just comes out with that. Like, and keep in mind, the trials they're facing, many kinds, right, obviously, but one main one was a spiritual trial, and in that they were being persecuted for their faith. In other words, now for us, persecution just looks like people won't hang out with us, won't let me hang out with them because I'm a Christian, or they might make fun of me because I'm a Christian, or they won't invite me to stuff because I'm a Christian, whatever. For them, it was, oh, they're arresting me because I'm a Christian. They're murdering my children because I'm a Christian. They're hanging me on a cross to die slowly because I'm a Christian. They're putting me in a pit and throwing giant rocks at me until I die because I'm a Christian. These are the trials, one of the types of trials that they were facing. It was this spiritual trial. First Peter talks about it. Actually, before I get to the spiritual trial, let me just say that there is another type of trial, and that is the trial that you cause, the trial that's a result of your own mistake. In other words, you did something stupid, and so now you have to, like, pay the consequences, right? Like, for instance, there were those last week who probably did drink too much, and they threw up all over their mom's house and got in trouble, right? They have to deal with those consequences because of their own stupid mistake. When I chose to go drive and forget to turn my headlights on and get pulled over and get a DUI, that was my own, that trial was a result of my mistake of choosing, not just to drive without my headlights on, but choosing to drink and drive with my headlights off. And so if you're going to drink and drive, make sure your headlights are on. I don't want them to get pulled over. It'll ruin their life. It stays on your record. I'm telling you, that's easier, I guess. Just don't do that. Call a taxi. Call Bree. She'll pick you up. But so we have those trials. I will say this. James isn't talking about those kinds of trials. He's not saying, hey, consider it pure joy when you're a moron. No, he's saying, I hope you're miserable because you're a moron. Like, you shouldn't have done that, right? Deal with it, own up to your mistake, and accept the consequences, punishment, whatever. Just do it. Like, if you're a moron, accept the fact that you had a moment of stupidity, and move on from there. Sorry, just distracted. All right, so back to what I was saying. Spiritual trial. There's a spiritual trial. 1 Peter chapter 4, 14 through 16. If you're insulted because of the name of Christ, you're blessed. For the Spirit of glory and of God rests on you. If you suffer, it should be as a murderer. It should not be as a murderer. That changes the whole like idea of what he's saying. If you suffer, it should not be as a murderer or a thief or any other kind of criminal or even as a meddler. However, if you suffer as a Christian, do not be ashamed, but praise God that you bear that name. And what he's talking about here, he's talking about the spiritual trial, the spiritual hard time, suffering for Christ. In other words, you're going through something difficult because of your faith, and as a result of your faith. And that could be trying to find people to hang out with that aren't going to cause you to do stupid things, or people you're hanging out with who are doing stupid things to you, or are treating you like crap, or just outcasting you because of your faith, because you're different, because you're not like them, because you're religious, or whatever you know title or name they want to call you or give you. You face these trials, these sort of like, I want to choose to live differently because of this gift I've been given by God of just eternal salvation and like this love that I don't deserve. I'm like, what the heck is happening with my life, right? And because of that, people see us, we're so different and we're so changed, they can't handle it. They don't know what to do with it. And like anything, when it's different from us and we don't understand it or know it or are even scared of it or whatever, we push it away. We create distance, or we'll attack it and make it seem less than, like it's the wrong way, like it's the wrong thing to do or be a part of. Because if it's the right thing to be a part of and you're not a part of it, well then, like, what the heck is wrong with you? And nobody wants to face that, like, realization and do that. And that's candles flying. They're shining their light in the world. No one wants to deal with that or totally distracts me. It's okay, I forgive you. If you want to throw more, it's okay. But so fitting in, everybody wants us to either push us off or make fun of us or whatever because of our faith. And I think sometimes as believers, we can often feel like we have two options. Like we just kind of sacrifice who we are and what we do and how we live to fit in with the crowd, or we own up to our faith and our beliefs, and we try to live life to the fullest and live it like a rock star and live it out. And for that reason, we can end up feeling pretty alone. Feeling like, I think sometimes even feeling like there's no other Christians out there in the world, especially Christians or believers that are my age. I think even when you come into a room and in a setting like this, where you're with peers at a church in an environment where some dude's going to talk about Jesus, you can still feel like, man, I'm just so alone in my faith. And if there's one place you should never feel alone, it should be with other believers. And if a building is going to take the name of church, which simply just means a gathering of believers, then no one should ever feel alone in that place. Home, living room, building, university, wherever. No one should ever feel alone here. No one should ever feel left out in this room. I think, I would even say that I know that that's not the case, though. I know that people, some of you, maybe even most of you sometimes, or all of us at least once, we'll walk into this room or onto this campus and feel insignificant, feel like you're not good enough, feel like you're not wanted, feel like you don't belong here. Somehow you feel like in a room full of people, you're the only one there. And there is no one else. Sometimes the loneliest places can be in a group of people. These guys keep throwing candles. Thanks, guys, by the way. I asked them to. You did? Sorry. I should have told the leaders. My bad. Good job, though. Way to be an outstanding leader. You didn't distract all of us from, you know, condemning them or anything like that. You get a raise. I'll double your salary. How much do volunteers make again? I asked them to throw these candles out here. Now, I was hoping there would be even more, and it would kind of build up and build up. There'd be even more. You know, just like grab a handful. Just throw like a handful out here, just to help my illustration better. Don't hit anybody in front of you. Just like, just really, okay. All right, just keep it right here. Okay, right. Okay, don't hit the instrument. All right, we're good. Okay, now let's just pretend that all of these one by... I have two shoes. And if I miss with the first one, that's because it's a warning shot. All right, so now let's just pretend that these candles all started just appearing slowly, little by little, one by one. If it's just one and just kind of happens, like, okay, whatever, well, then another one just kind of happens, another one just kind of happens, another one just kind of happens. For me, I was hoping this would sort of illustrate how when we just sort of let one person kind of feel alone or like they don't belong or they're not welcomed or they're not a part of it, because we already got our group of friends over here and we go to this school over here and you don't go to our school, you don't really do anything that we do, but yeah, we all come to the same church, but so we're just going to kind of come hang out over here. So you just, you know, hopefully you bring someone you know, because otherwise you're not going to know anybody in this place. I think that we can kind of slip into that attitude a little bit of just, we're just a bunch of people coming together who all happen to come to this one place, when the reality is we're all one family, one body with Christ as our head, coming together to be united. And what's so amazing about how we are all from different areas of the town and schools and backgrounds and struggles and whatever else is that when we come here, it doesn't matter how different we are, because what unites us is that God loves us all the same. Is that for every single person in this room, he came down to earth as a man and died on a cross for every single person in this room. And then he just died for you, but then conquered death and came back to life so that he could speak on your behalf. And that every believer who believes in that, he sends his spirit to live inside of us, to guide us. So as we come here, it's like the body coming back together, right? The fingers, you guys, we all go off. We all go our separate ways throughout the week. But, you got fingernails over there. What's a finger without a fingernail? I mean, that sucks. If you ever lost a fingernail, it's like super sensitive. Like someone breathes on it. You're like, ah, you know, it's awful. A finger needs its fingernail. Otherwise, what's it going to do? Just like stay in its nose for protection? I don't know. Hopefully there's a nose nearby. What's happening? But when we come together, it's the body coming back together. So no matter who you are, no matter how different you are, everybody should belong. There is no group of someone, this group from this school coming here to hang out, or that group from that school or whatever coming here to hang out. It is one body, one group of believers coming here to be together. And I think why I'm focusing on this is because I think that we've had this sort of elephant in our room, or this slow buildup of candles in our room of just clickiness this year. And I think for us as a group, it's a trial that we're having to face together. For me, as someone, and I say this a lot, and really anybody, but I didn't grow up in the church, and so whenever I went, I felt like such an outsider. I felt like this isn't my place. I felt like I shouldn't be here, when in reality, I was the one who needed it more than anybody. Because, you know, everyone in the church should have already been saved, right? Going to heaven and all that jazz. But I was this lost soul trying to find my way. And whenever I'd come in and feel like nobody cared who I was or anything like that, it's just, why would I ever want to come back here? And not just back to that place, but why would I want anything to do with Christ or this Christianity and this religion? What's the point? And so I think we've had this trial and this hard time that can easily just, we can just ignore, can go unspoken about for a long time. But it's one that we need to constantly check ourselves and remind ourselves of. And I think it's not always intentional, right? We're not always being jerks about it, about shutting people out or whatever. You know, we're just having fun and we had a fun time with a select few people we're talking about or whatever. But being aware and being sensitive to everybody around you and including everybody in on the conversation. Someone walks by in here and they just kind of look at you and you're all in the middle of conversation, just freaking grab them, wrap your arm around them and bring them in. If you're a guy and you do that to a girl, maybe that's a little bit weird, but if you're a girl and you do that to a guy, he'll be like, all right, cool. But invite them into your circle. Invite them into your conversation. Make people feel welcome. One of my biggest things, if we're nothing else here, I don't care if people walk through the doors with a joint in their hand. Like, as long as they're welcoming and trying to seek truth and know God, I really don't care. I don't care. I don't want perfect people here. Because that's not what Jesus is about. I want people who are going to come through this door with their struggles, with their trials, and they're not going to be fake about it. And they're going to be vulnerable and open and invite everybody in and make everybody feel welcome, regardless of how uncool or uncomfortable it might be to talk or sit or hang out with those people. Man, and I would hope that that just wouldn't happen here, but it would happen in your schools. That you would just stop caring what other people think if someone sees you having a conversation with that might make you look bad or why are you talking to that person. You're talking to that person, you're hanging out with that people, those people, because you have the love of Christ in you, or you at least have heard about the love of God and have hopefully accepted him as your Lord and Savior, and now you want to live that out, and you want to show that to everybody. And it doesn't happen by being inclusive or exclusive. It happens by being inclusive. And then the last kind of trial that we kind of face is there's just mysterious trials. The Job, story of Job type trials. Trials that just, no one really did anything to cause them. It's just life sucks. No one did anything to cause me to like puke and crap my brains out a week ago, right? It wasn't like they were like injecting like, I don't know, me while I was asleep with sickness. I don't know, maybe my wife did, but she got sick too, so it could have been her, right? No one did anything to cause that. Death, disease, those kinds of things, car accidents, just whatever, or sometimes even you do study hard for a test and you still bomb it, but you studied hard. It's not like you did something wrong. You did your best, but the result is still difficult to deal with. It's still a trial. And we have these trials that aren't because of anyone's fault. They're just difficult and they're hard. And so James writes about having joy in these trials. And it's for a reason. And again, he doesn't just say have joy, but he says because you know the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And let that perseverance finish its good works so that you'd be mature and complete. I think we tend to respond to difficult times and difficult, hard times in life with anger at the situation, or maybe even anger at God, or we withdraw completely and become apathetic, and it's no big deal, just let the candles, you know, fill up everywhere, whatever. You know, it's not my fault that that person doesn't feel like they're welcomed here. I don't know. It's not my responsibility. It's just not that big of a deal. Or we fake it. We pretend we're happy. We pretend everything's awesome, and we live in this facade, this fake life, this alternate fake reality that isn't real because we just don't want to deal with it. We want to pretend that the hard stuff isn't happening. Or the correct response is we respond to it with joy. Not happy about the crappy situations or the difficult stuff, but joyful because with our faith in God, He allows these things to happen in our lives because they're going to make us stronger. That word testing, the testing of your faith, it's the same word in the original language that they would use when working out hot, like working out metal. You beat the metal, you test it, and you beat it, and you beat it, and you beat it over and over to make it stronger, to make it as strong as possible. And it's that same idea of these trials are beating you down because it's going to make you stronger. And so when you persevere through them with faith, like have joy knowing that when you come out at the other end of it, your character, who you are, you're going to be so much stronger as an individual in your faith than you were before you went into that trial, before you went into that hard time. And I'll just kind of leave you with this. Getting through a trial, getting through these trials, getting through them with joy, it's not just about getting to the end of it so we can look back and say, look what I got through with God. Man, that's awesome. That's what the joy is about. No, the joy that you're supposed to have when you're in the midst of the hard time is looking ahead and going, man, as soon as I get through this, I'm going to be so much stronger. My faith's going to be stronger. My perseverance is going to be stronger. My patience is going to be better. My forgiveness is going to be greater. My grace is going to be even more amazing than what it was. How I live for God is going to be even better. Not just so I can celebrate being out of that trial, but so that I can be ready to handle the next more difficult thing that I'm going to go through in my life. Because your life will always have trials. And each one will always be harder than the next. What you're facing now in high school, as difficult and as hard as they are, they're really kind of minuscule to what you'll face in 10 years from now, which is where I'm at. And 10 years from now, what I'm going to face is going to be even more difficult, the things I'm going to experience and see. But why I have joy in that, why I can look ahead and be excited, is because when I look back and I see what I've been through and I see how that they've made me better, how they've made my faith stronger and made my character stronger, I know that what I have to look forward to and what I'm in now, as scary, as hard, and as difficult as it might seem, would make me stronger. And for us as a group, as we go through this trial that I believe we're in of not being one giant unit, one giant body of believers. As we get through this, we should have joy now, knowing we're in it, looking ahead, because at the end of it, we'll be even better and be the best, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, youth group in the valley at making people feel welcome. Hopefully, a few months from now, a month from now, whatever, when we get through this, if they did a survey of students who attend churches across the valley, hopefully we would be high on places where people feel welcome regardless of who you are, what you look like, talk like, walk like, sound like, whatever. And so I hope tonight in small groups, in your breakout groups, as you discuss this, which breakout groups are the most important thing we do here, and it's been a long time since we've had them. I think sometimes when I go too long without just sitting down and talking about life with people and God and being real and vulnerable, I just kind of feel like a little bit weak in my spirituality. And I felt that a little bit over the last few weeks. And I think it's because we haven't been together. We haven't hung out. It's been a while since this body's been together. So when you go into your small groups, take advantage of that small setting. Be open, be vulnerable, take off the facade and talk about what's been difficult in your life. Talk about what's difficult now. Talk about what freaks you out about the future. and talk about how to have joy in that. Maybe talk about how to make people feel more welcome. Invite someone different to winter camp. If you're going to winter camp, maybe I'd challenge you, don't share a bunk with someone that you know. You can keep them close, keep them in the same room, but share a bunk with someone completely different and make a new best friend. Make new best friends on that trip. Trust me, it's the best weekend to do it. Use winter camp as a tool to kind of help us as a whole through this trial. That's my hope for winter camp. That's why I want you guys all to be there, regardless of what you have going on. If you can't make it because of whatever, I get it, but I hope you can make it. So let me pray, and then we'll head to break our groups. God, just thank you for being a God that can take just a messed up group of people and who... If it wasn't for you, none of us in this room, God, none of us would be hanging out. We wouldn't all just randomly decide to get together and hang out. For one, it'd be creepy if I hung out with them just like randomly. That'd be awkward and weird. But God, because of you, because how awesome you are, you've brought us all together. And God, I just pray for us, God. We ask for your help as a group, the uprising here at the Grove, God, that you would help us to be a place that represents you. Place of open arms, acceptance, grace, forgiveness. God, a place that will hold each other accountable in our struggles, in the trials that we bring in our own lives, not our own faults, God, but at the same time, I pray that you would help us all to be there for each other and encourage and support each other in the difficult times as well.